Thank you. I think this is a very nice follow-up to the previous presentation. The difference here, we're still going to talk about post-campaign RTL or BEDNET distribution, but the difference here is that this is the universal coverage approach, where the idea is to look at whether we have one net for two. So I think, as classical, I'm going first to give you a background and then give you some detail about the methodological approach, and then present some results and discuss some of the issue that came out. So as you can see in the background, ITN is, although it's actually sort of universally agreed that's still one of the key interventions to reduce malaria burden, we still realize that in most of the country, the coverage is very low. Nigeria, as you can see in the latest DHS conducted in 2008, you have 8% of ITN ownership, which is quite low. And if you look at the use is very rather low, 6% of the under five who are supposed to be the target population, and most at-risk population have low ITN use, pregnant women as well. So the government decided to put in place a strategy in order to increase this coverage so that it's a sort of they go to war achieving some of the targets agreed upon. So one of the strategies agreed here is the free campaign distribution. And the idea is that they want to distribute about 63 million ITN by end of 2010, which we have. And they hope to have 80% of this ITN use. So so what's the background on that? What's happened is that they got some funding from USAID and the World Bank to implement this campaign. But the first stage was to have a kind of pilot stage, which they select the first state, which is a northern state in Nigeria, Kano State. And there they distributed more than 4 million nets. Now, our question is that, what is the effect of this net? In fact, the survey we conducted, there is already a complete report produced. If you want to have access to this, so I can give you the link, and where we detail all the different objectives that are set to address by this survey. But here, I'm going to focus on looking at the equity aspect. So just to give you a quick overview, I think I don't need to describe where in Nigeria, because there's some presentation previously already, and I think maybe some of the discussion about the location is there. The focus will be here on Kano State. If you see here in green is the second wave, because the campaign was done in two waves, as previously mentioned. And then in yellow, it's the first wave. In terms of sample size, how do we decide to make sure that we are able to capture, detect 50% of change from post-campaign to pre-campaign? Unfortunately here, we didn't have, as the previous presentation, we didn't have a baseline survey. So we were sort of contracted to have a survey just after the campaign. But so we tried to power our sample size to be able to detect at least 50% this point change in terms of coverage. So the procedure is that there is initially what we call a sampling frame, and that's a list of all the household use for the distribution campaign. And then from there, we did a two-stage cluster sampling. The first stage was to select 30 clusters, and then from there, we selected the different household within individual community. In terms of data collection, it took our place from October to November, basically over 2 weeks period. And our timing in relation to the different campaigns was 5 months after the first campaign, and then 6 months after the second, so 5 months after the first campaign and 3 months after the second campaign. This is really important in terms of looking at the impact and survival of different mosquito nets that were distributed. And then we use a structural questionnaire, which is basically one of the classical a questionnaire used in a malaria indicator survey, where we have the use aspect there, and we also have some BCC aspect, and also the survival of a different mosquito net distributed. So we do use as a primary respondent the head of household, but then as a secondary respondent is the person who actually went to the distribution point and collected the nets, because some of the information can only be given by a person who actually went to the distribution point. And before any survey, of course, we got a consent, but this was basically verbal consent. So how did we look at equity here in terms of net use and net distribution? So basically the first stage, we did a simple logistic regression, which is a binary response. So for the first aspect in terms of net possession, we looked at household net ownership. So here what we do is that we take household whether there is any ITN in this household. We didn't look at the difference between ITN and non-ITN, because non-ITN was basically very low. So we assume that all the possession of any net is quite relevant. And then we compare it to our predictor, which is the wealth index here. We did similar analysis for use, and use here, we define it as at least one person in the household slept in a net the previous night. And then, of course, our predictors remain also the wealth index. Then the second stage, to really look at equity, some of you may be familiar with that. We did the equity analysis using the Lorenzo concentration curve, and also calculate the index, which actually tells you where is the difference in terms of equity between poor and rich. And this was done for both ITN possession and use. We set initially to cover 1,020 households, but at the end we cover 987, which is about 97% of all our households. Basically, we missed few of them, and one because for some households we went there several times after free visit, we didn't really find someone who's able to adequately answer our questions. So these also were dropouts, and then we got very few refusal. I mean, basically due to the nature of the survey, which is really not a kind of aggressive survey. So the sample size characteristic at the end of the survey, as you can see here, we have about we cover about 4,600 people, and we have slightly higher number of female as you would expect in this population structure. Important here is that the mean size of a household is about 4.6, which is also important for the distribution strategy and how you really asset coverage. Head of household here is 95% in this region, and if you look at the DHS, this is basically in line with what the with other survey. And the proportion of polygamists is very important here, because during the distribution process, they have sort of to create a different definition of a household, which is basically if you have a two wife or three wife, each wife will be considered as a household. Otherwise, the target of one net per two will be distorted, or one net per two also will be distorted if we don't have a different definition of household, and that's why it was done here. And then we look at in terms of distribution of the target. Here although we are focusing on universal coverage, so we are not sort of specific target group. It's still important to see that the population of under five in our sample size was relatively high, as you will expect, about 20% in most of these African country. Again, if you look at the population structure here, it's more or less similar with what this. Saying that our sample soil was relatively well selected. So quickly to give you some results, is the distribution process was quite well, because if you look at all the household register, 62% of them almost got the nets. Of course, you got some few who didn't get registered but still got nets. But the other thing is that you have almost 20% who really did not get registered. And that could be some problem with a registration system. Now, let's look at the equity issue. If looking at the results here, if you look at just looking at the proportion of household who got nets by wealth quantile, as you can see here, basically before the campaign, the distribution is quite. You can see that the higher percentage of the richer people, the higher quantile, have much more coverage in terms of net possession as compared to the lowest quantile. And that was before the campaign. But after the campaign, it also sort of basically leveled out. And that's the same thing when you look at the rural area. So I initially said that we didn't conduct any baseline, but what we did, because we retrospectively asked the nets with the nets they got before the campaign. So that was pretty possible to get this information. But for youth, it's basically impossible because you refer to the previous night. In terms of logistic regression, try to control for some of the covariates, as you can see on the right side there, you see also basically there's no significant difference between the different group, which is quite interesting. That's the post-campaign only we did this one. There's basically no difference between the age group. And just if you look at the rural area, they're more or less the same. And if you go and look at the concentration curve, so you see that if there is an equitable distribution among the population, then you will have this black line, which is the equity line. Now, on the farthest you are from the line, mean that there is a difference in terms of equity. If it goes up, it becomes minus, you get minus, that means that the poor are better off compared to the richer. But here you can see for the before the campaign, it's rather went down, and you have an index which is 0.5. As you know, the index varies from minus one to one. So the closer, if you go to one, that means you have a very equity gap here. But here, after the campaign, the equity gap just reduced really dramatically, which is quite interesting result to know. In terms of use, if you look at, although here what's happened is that you have very few number, and what's happened is you may not find any significance here, and most of the result I can see here, none of them is actually significant, but you still see in terms of proportion that there's a difference in use where the richer use much more compared to the poor. The equity line is also basically the same, what you see. Although the difference is sort of, you can see some differences, but the difference is not that high. Unfortunately, we didn't have any data to show the pre-campaign use. Otherwise, probably the equity line would have gone down, really seriously down. But here we sort of have roughly some kind of reduced equity gap here. Which takes us to say that, I mean, it has been, the free campaign distribution is actually a good strategy. But some of the things that we should look at, because other, when you take up this data, people want to go and do further analysis. They should be aware that this is really a very restricted sample, which was designed to look at actually 50% increase from effect side. That's basically, it gives you a small sample size, which allow you basically to assess some of the outcome that you're looking at. But you're very restricted if you want to do further analysis. One of the key things we also question here, we didn't have any baseline survey, and I think it's very critical, especially for youth, that we have a baseline survey before the campaign is conducted. And the other thing is also the seasonal effect. This was conducted just after the rainy season, and that might have some effect on the youth. Now, just to summarize, I think the campaign helped a lot to increase net ownership. It's also increased sort of the use, the coverage in use, and level out so the equity. That brings us to say that free campaign distribution is a good strategy if it's well implemented, because it will help to reduce the gap. It's also clear that if you have a coverage increase, basically the gap between poor and rich will decrease in whichever services you're looking at. So, but the question that we're putting up here, it's fine, the free distribution campaign can achieve a lot, but these campaigns don't last forever. They get destroyed, the survival of most of these campaigns, although it's long lasting. If it's not well maintained, you have maybe 2 year or maximum 3 year survival of these nets, not in terms of the efficacy in repelling or in killing the vector, but in terms of the quality, whether the ITN is still good. So you have about a survival rate of about two years. So that means after 2 years, it has to be replaced. So a strategy needs to be put in place to ensure that this is sustainable and it's regularly replaced, so that any impact that we achieve is sort of sustained over time. So from there, I would just like to acknowledge some of my colleagues here involved in this study. And this study also, thank you. Then I have to end with this one because this is kind of a contractual obligation that we always, so you don't need to read it, yeah. But we have to, yeah.
Are there any questions? Yes, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I guess the issue here, whichever cost is the net, because as long as you talk about long lasting, the cost, you can choose a brand which is quite, you know, far away expensive than that can afford. But even if the cost is reasonable, you still need a mechanism to ensure that you have a regular supply. So I don't have any data, or I don't have, I don't know the cost of the ITN which was used particularly for this campaign, but the whole issue is really to be able to have a mechanism. The Global Fund is providing some money for countries who get around to distribute these nets, but now Global Fund is also drying out slowly, and they're putting down a very strict strategy on how you get this net, a kind of performance-based grant, and then so on. So things become very, very difficult and restricted. So, yes, the, yeah, fine. Yeah, I guess that's here one of the key things that need to be. The problem is that among poor, there's some condition which should be fulfilled for the use of nets. In some case, first of all, you have a problem of hanging the nets because the structure of your house doesn't really allow you to hang easily the nets, so it's a kind of challenge. So that sort of influence your use. If a net is not hung, you won't use it. That's one aspect. The other aspect is also even other housing condition. Maybe it's not well ventilated, it's hot inside. So when you get on the net, you get suffocated. So in that case, people sort of restricted the use. Another setting, which is, I mean, that setting in northern Nigeria is similar to where I come from Burkina. When it's hot, people sleep outside mostly because you can't sleep inside. And sleeping outside during the dry season is sort of, there's no much mosquitoes. So people basically don't use the nets. And all the logistic of hanging the net outside is basically, you know, too much for people to hang it. So you end up for people not using nets. But for rich people, sort of relatively rich people, I mean, they have relatively probably well-built house, and all the other conditions are sort of fulfilled that they can easily hang. That's not to mention the issue about awareness, whether, because one of the key things that came out here, people basically don't use nets because they want to protect themselves against malaria, but they protect themselves against the mosquito nuisance, and which is quite critical when you look at it. So most of the BCC that we're trying to advocate is that this really needs to, because even in dry season, you're still able to get malaria, you get bitten by mosquito, and the transmission is still there, although it's low, especially in this region, but the transmission is there. So the net should not be used because you don't want nuisance from mosquito, but to protect yourself again, which is much more, you know, well-conceived among relatively richer people than poor.
Great, thanks. Thank you.
Thank you.